just a fact.
Well, let me put it to someone who can probably answer that. And then it's Reverend Anthony Bailey. He's with the Parkdale United Church. He's joining us here. What do you think, Reverend?
About what specifically?
The last point there, that now's not the time to take in protest in Canada because it isn't happening here. The bill just raised.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of weighing the crisis of the moment. I agree that we have to be very, very careful about not seeing a spike in the transmission of cases and so forth. I think that's true. But what is also true is that this is a long history that we have experienced. And I think that a lot of people don't realize this. I've been trying to talk to a number of people who are trying to figure out this whole issue with George Floyd and why the kind of response that has taken place and why Canadians, Black Canadians and other Canadians are engaged in this. This country, our own country, yes, it's not the same thing. We don't have the same history as the United States, but this country of Canada also has a history of racism.
Give us some of the
We go back to 1911 and the order in council by Sir Wilfrid Laurier's government. It was specifically introduced to ban Black people from coming to Canada. And that was only repealed in the early 60s. Now, Blacks did manage to come, but the intent was to stop Black people from coming to Canada. There was slavery in Canada, in Nova Scotia, in Ontario. And we've seen systemic racism also. So people here have a right to experience and to talk about and to demonstrate this because it is disproportionately felt on people of African descent. Your listeners may not be aware, but I have personally experienced this scourge of racist violence and murder. My brother and I were attacked in Montreal by racist men who decided that they, because of who they are as white people, were better than Black people and attacked us and stabbed my brother through the heart and killed him and tried to kill me too. Why? Because we didn't even know them, the color of our skin, the understanding that somehow a narrative has been created that some people are better than other people, and therefore they have the right to do whatever they can. And it's not only personal one-on-one. It has to do with institutional, educational system. Here in our very city of Ottawa, the traffic stop report has shown Middle Eastern and Black people, Black men in particular, are disproportionately stopped. I have been followed by police. I do anti-Black racism training with police recruits in schools, in federal government departments. I try to make a case that we have to understand the problem.
The chief has released a statement basically echoing the fact that what happened in the United States shouldn't have happened, adding his voice to the condemnation of what happened to Mr. Floyd, and saying that he continues in the fight to deal with the racism here in Ottawa. What did you want to hear from the chief, Reverend?
Well, I like the chief. I'm a supporter of the chief. I believe that he is straight talking. I believe that he is honest, has integrity, and a desire to see a change. I've had a number of conversations with him, and I believe that he really wants to do the right thing here. And so I support his initiative. I support that. I read the statement that came out today, and I feel that it is sincere. There's a lot of work to be done, and he's committed to doing it. Is it perfect? Is the situation there? But I think he's moving the Ottawa Police Service in the right direction. He's seeking to ensure that there are more diverse officers and that training is stepped up. And I've seen the initiatives that he has undertaken.
And it takes time, right? It's not a simple answer or implement a certain policy. It's going to take time. And that's what you mean by moving in the right direction.
It will. It will take time, but I think that it also requires a certain humility of people who have held particular views and perspectives for a long time to re-examine them, to re-examine the impact that those views and the way in which society is structured to disadvantage certain people.
Reverend Bailey, I'm sorry for your loss, what you had to live that day. Where was the anger and the revenge that most people would react? It's human when you see what happened, A, racism, and B, murder, happen in front of you. Where did that go? Because that would be the human reaction initially. And how come you didn't follow that route?
It would be. And it has to do with my Christian faith. It has to do with the fact that not only in counseling and the Christian community coming alongside me, but also understanding what it means to reverence sacred life, to reverence the life that is given by God, the breath that God breathes into every human being. And even though people are absolutely acting in evil ways, it would be demeaning both to my spirit, to my faith, to my commitment to humanity to do likewise, to hate the one who hates me, to wish violence against the one who has done violence against me. That is not the way of Jesus. That is not the teaching. It doesn't mean you lie down and roll over, but it means that you have constructive, prayerful, supportive ways of transforming. And I'm trying to do that in the things that I do, going into schools and talking to people, helping them understand the falsity of the premise of these behaviors. And it has to do with the invention of race. Some people don't realize that race was invented before the 17th and 18th century. The notion of race did not exist. People were referred to in terms of their culture, in terms of where they lived and that sort of thing. This was something invented by European philosophers, Carolus and Leonis, who came forward, David Hume, Immanuel Kant. If you read Immanuel Kant, he writes a lot of people. He was the foremost intellectual and philosopher of the 18th century, 18th and 19th century. And he said the race of the human perfection is found in the race of the white. And Indians and others are a little below, and Negroes are at the very bottom. That's what he said. And it created this notion of this hierarchy of peoples. And that was created in order to justify the dispossession of people from Africa, the slave trade, and so forth, to say that we have the right to imprison people. We have the right to enslave people because we are better than them. Some of you may have heard of the Human Genome Project. The Human Genome Project spent 10 years examining the 3.3 billion base pairs of human genetics, of the human genome. They have found there's absolutely no biological reason or purpose for the notion of race. It doesn't exist.
Reverend Bailey, as we look at history, current and recent past, what we have seen unfold in the last six nights in the United States is not new. It's just it's a different name that has triggered these protests. When it goes from a call for justice and equality into protest, as a black man watching this unfold, do you worry that the message is getting lost?
Yes, in some way. I understand the rage. I understand the rage, and I understand the need to protest. But we have to understand that there's more going on here than meets the eye. What some people may know or may not know is that they are professional infiltrators. Mm-hmm. And it is suspected, I don't have proof of this, but some of my friends, the people I'm speaking to in the United States, are telling me that they are people who are professionally being deployed to disrupt and to create mayhem in order to discredit the protest. It's not to say that everyone is doing that. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
There's some people who are using this as an advantage. But there is an organized, orchestrated attempt. If you look a few nights ago, and I think it was in Philadelphia, I believe, that outside of the stores, there was a neatly placed mound of blocks. Of bricks that you could throw that were there overnight. So the curfew, and then in the next morning, we found all of these bricks neatly laid out. Who put them there?
Mm-hmm.
Who put those there? There's an organized attempt to discredit this, and some of the mayhem that is being undertaken is not only by the crowds, but it's by an organized group that is trying to discredit this.
It happens often when there are major protests. At G7, for example, we have certain sectors that are provocateurs, as they call them. And I would imagine that's what you're referring to in this case, too.
Absolutely.
That being said, the criticism that is being pushed towards these protesters is not doing the cause any good.
No, it isn't. People are being opportunistic.
Yeah.
The looting and all of those things. I understand the anger. I understand the frustration. When I go, I speak at conferences in the United States. I go frequently there. And I'm telling you, I am very careful when I walk on the streets. I have been walking with a group of the conferees at the conference that I'm speaking to, for instance, in Atlanta, and I am pulled out of that crowd and asked, what am I doing there? And I'm saying, I'm one of the theme speakers here. I'm the only black person in a particular group, and I'm pulled out of the crowd asking, what am I doing here? Mm. So I've experienced this personally. I see the reality of it.
And locally,
I think that too. I understand the anger, yeah. The anger of it, but I don't condone the rioting. I don't condone the burning of businesses. The people who own those businesses, they are traumatized also. I don't condone that, but I understand the anger, the pent-up anger of the systemic, generational racism that is perpetrated on black bodies over and over and over again.
And you've experienced it here in Ottawa as well.
I have experienced it, and other people of African descent have experienced it as well. So it is not, people need to understand this. Those who are not in this situation have to try to understand areas of experience that they have no notion of. They only see certain superficial ways of understanding this. There needs to be a cogent, constructive way of seeing why the pain is there, why the pent-up anger. This is a system. It's systematic and systemic racism.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Bailey, as we see what's different this time, you see police officers taking a knee. You see sheriffs, one in Des Moines, Iowa, for example, taking off all the riot gear and walking with the crowds. Do you feel that it's different this time, or are we going to find ourselves here in a decade from now again?
Well, I remain hopeful. As a person of faith, I believe in transformation, but I also believe that that comes through justice and agitation in peaceful ways. And I think that these are signals that if you look at the composition of the crowd, look at the composition of the crowd, mm-hmm. the young people from all so-called races, people of different hues are coming out in droves to support this and to understand it. That's hopeful for me. It's hopeful when the authorities, when the police chiefs and others are recognizing that there's a deep problem, and they want to model and symbolize a certain solidarity. They're not condoning the rioting and so forth, but they want to show that they're getting it. They're trying to understand. They're trying to feel with the people who are feeling so outraged legitimately by what is going on. If you're not a person of color, if you're not a person of African descent living in this context, it's hard to understand unless you're willing to be humble enough to be taught and to be educated. We have, even here in Canada, you may have heard some on the media outlets, black reporters and others talking about having the talk with your children,
right?
Especially your male children.
Yes.
I have a son. I have a son. And my wife and I have talked to him. I have given him the talk when he was younger. You need, when you go out with your friends and others who are not black, you have to realize that if they're getting into trouble, if something happens, you're likely to be the person who is going to be pulled out of that crowd. You have to talk about being careful about how you associate and where you go.
Well, that is a
terrible burden on black families who have to do that, because that's the reality, and it's not only in the United States.
Reverend Bailey, I had a mother on Friday of a 7-year-old, and she said she believes she's a year away from having to have the talk with her son, who will be looked at as society as a cute boy to a threat. Seven years old. That's something that white families don't have to worry about, and that's just the beginning of the list.
Absolutely.
Of raising someone who is of black origin in this country, of African descent. There's a lot of work to be done, Reverend. Those of us who aren't black, what are we doing wrong that we should be doing?
I think the allyship is so important, and it really requires a humility. I think what happens is a natural inclination. I mean, my background is in social work and psychology, counseling, and so forth. And I know that people hearing this, they're reacting already. They're being defensive. Well, I'm not like that. I'm a nice person. What is clear is that there's no room at all for middle ground, so to speak. What I mean by that, there's either racism or anti-racism. Being silent and ignoring it is part of the problem. It's part of the problem. And so part of what we have to understand is that there needs to be a humility that says, I don't know why this is going on. I don't know the full experience of people of African descent, of black people. I don't understand it. Let me be willing to have a posture of learning and understanding. I'd mention a particular resource that I think is very, very helpful. It's a book by Robin DiAngelo. It's called White Fragility.
White
Fragility, yes. And Robin DiAngelo. And she, as an intellectual professor, she talked about her own journey of moving from a complete obliviousness to the reality of systemic racism, to actually then going into intentional ways of speaking with people, of understanding what is going on, of the blind spots that are there, and educating herself, listening to other people, so that she now is trying to speak to her white counterparts and say, look, here's what I've discovered. This is what is going on. If you want to really be an ally, this is what you have to learn about our role in being allies in this.
Reverend Anthony Bailey from the Parkdale United Church, thank you, sir. I appreciate your time and your insights this morning.
Thank you for bringing this to the fore.
We'll be back, and we're going to go live to Minneapolis right after this on News Talk 5.